crackers, to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcasts. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, zips, sits. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
All right. Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, Episode 11. I am Stank Dog here once again for your listening pleasure, or pain as it were, whatever you prefer. And I am joined this week by another special guest, someone you've heard of and known before, but you've probably never heard. I don't think you've ever been on the air before, have you?
No.
No. So, Voodoo Hal, say hello to the people.
Hello, everyone.
Voodoo Hal is on here today because we're going to talk about some programming topics and some source code and open source ideas. So we're going to jump into that in a minute, but before we do, I want to pimp the IRC channel. Now, I know a lot of the regular listeners know that we have an IRC channel, but I want to emphasize that it's open all the time. That channel is 24/7. The show doesn't have to be on necessarily for you to go out there and visit and have some intelligent conversation. So, for those of you who don't know, it is irc.esper.net, that's E-S-P-E-R.net, channel BINREV, which is pound B-I-N-R-E-V, and that is the main channel for where most of us hang out and just talk when we're come and go, and a lot of people idle in it, but for the most part, you can always see a few people in there, so stop in, say hi, talk, ask questions. It's a pretty good environment, pretty good place to hang out. Especially during the show, we get upwards of 10-15 people in there at any given time during the show, of course depending on everyone's schedules. I know a lot of people listen to the MP3s and download it and listen when they have time. I think you do that, don't you, Hal?
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, see, I listen to a lot of the shows while I'm coding, while I'm at work, so I know a lot of people do that and they can't make the IRC, but just wanted to let people know that it is out there. So come on, hang out and check it out. And we also have, you know, there's some other channels. There's an RFA channel. There's a DDP code channel, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. So yeah, go check that out. It's another source of hanging out, meeting new people, talking about hacking topics and things that you may have in common. Also, before we go into some of the news topics, I got an email from, well, it came from a person, but I never give out people's real names on the air unless they specifically tell me so or authorize me so or give me a handle. So I'm just going to say from an anonymous person who informed me that the server was down, and he actually got the contact information to send me the email from Google. So I thought that was kind of cool. Basically just called to say that he found the show and he liked it, so I'm glad to hear that. Thank you very much for saying that, and I hope you stick around and listen to the show. I hope we keep it up, a good show each week. But is there a hosting company out there that doesn't suck? I keep trying all these different hosts and I don't know why the servers go down. There's no excuse for it. I'm supposed to be guaranteed 99.9% uptime, and I've never found one that will guarantee me that. It's just, I don't know what else to do. I don't know if there's a point in moving around again, because every time I go to a new server, I have the same problems, and I lose a lot of development time. I lose a lot of time repairing and fixing and modifying stuff to run on the new server, because everyone's got it set up differently. No two control panels are ever the same. They always got different naming conventions, yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, that gets kind of old. So, unless it becomes a severe problem, I guess we're going to stay there for a while. I'm actually probably going to break down and sign a year contract. Right now we're month to month. And actually Bland is taking care of that right now, so I'd like to take that off of him. So he's actually got some ideas in mind that he wants to pursue as well. So I'm going to try to get that transferred over, and we might be committing to this current host for a year. Even though they're not the greatest, at least they've got a fair price, and for the most part, they're up and running. So, thank you again for the email. I hope you stick around. And actually, we've had a lot of new visitors lately, a lot of new people on the forums, a lot of new emails I've been getting and hearing from people, and I guess we thank the Googlebot for that, don't you think?
It's doing its job, I suppose.
Yeah, I actually did not intend, as people in the forums know, I didn't intend to invite all the bots out here, but again, because of the logic of moving from one server to another, I mistakenly took out the exception rule to stop them from coming in. I was blocking all user agents from coming into the forums folder, so I took that out and moved it to the new server, thinking that I would also move the forums over that same day. Something came up and I didn't get it done, but I forgot to go back and reset the damn exclusion rule. So along came the bots, and the rest is history. So everybody wave, say hi to the Googlebot, say hi to a Hotbot. Hotbot's a big fat twat. Just throw that out there. And actually, it's good. You know, really, you got to take the good with the bad, but, you know, there's a lot of good people coming in, a lot of information that could be brought in, and we just have to deal with it. I mean, growth is a part of life, and we are going to have to make the site grow and continue, so I think it's a good thing. So we'll deal with it, we'll take it as it comes on, and there's no point in blocking it back out now and putting the exclusion back in, because it's pretty much out there. So let's just ride it out and see where it goes. Now, I have actually been having something fun to do at work for a change recently. I've been working with PGP. I've actually been assigned to do some PGP stuff at work, and it's something I've wanted to do for years, and I've never had an excuse or a reason to sit down and force myself to do it. I've always had something else higher priority. So I finally got to sit down with PGP running under Solaris, and I'm finally tinkering around with that. I've been working with Saitu. We've been doing some testing. He knows a little bit about it as well. We're both kind of playing with that, and I actually, it's not as bad as I first thought. You know, it's a little intimidating. It's definitely not ready for prime time use for, you know, your everyday user at home. So it's a little disconcerting that only the hardcore tech geeks of us will actually be able to sit down and make use of encryption. I think everybody deserves to have the same access to encryption and privacy. But there still hasn't been a user-friendly front end. I've tried several plugins for Outlook and for Eudora and stuff like that. Voodoo Hal, have you ever used or found a PGP front end that a normal everyday user could use?
Actually, back in the day, for the company I worked for, we used one of the Outlook plugins, which I think was the IPGP.net, I believe it was.
IPGP?
I believe that's what it was called.
Okay.
But it worked well. Never had really that many issues with it. And then I don't know if you've seen PGP Phone, but that's kind of an interesting tool. Completely encrypted voice over IP program. Zimmerman and that whole group brought up quite a while ago.
Yeah, everyone that I've ever seen added an extra step or two to the process of sending and receiving mail, and I think for your typical user to use it, it needs to be more invisible. It needs to do all that stuff behind the scenes, and, you know, as the least intrusive it could possibly be. I mean, the most it should do is pop up and say, you know, someone has sent you their public key, you know, do you want to add it? And then it should automatically show you the message. And unfortunately, I just haven't seen one. I'm actually still would like to have I can use the command line one, like I said, but I would still like to have a nice, simple plugin. So I might check out IPGP.net, you said, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I might go check that one out. Another thing that I've had to deal with this week, and actually, it's not me, it's our good friend Dual Parallel. I thought I'd bring this up on the air. Even though he posted this in the forums, I want to make sure we explain to people. Last week we had Logan Five on, and we talked about a lot of the issues we have with publishing a magazine. And believe me, it is not a simple thing, and it's definitely not something we have mastered yet, so we're learning as we go along. One of the things we have discovered is that we're not a warehouse. We're not a retail outlet. We don't exactly have the capacity to keep inventory. So Duel has a few issues of 1.1 left, and he's actually going to print some more. I guess by the time we air this, it'll actually be, he'll actually have those printed, hopefully. But he is basically, and not just him, but everybody is basically moving on to 1.2 as far as distributing and being able to access them at your 2600 meetings. Definitely, absolutely, the back issues are available, but unfortunately we're only going to be able to offer them on binrev.com at this time, and that's using PayPal. Unless you get lucky, if somebody at one of your meetings, if you go to Chicago meeting and mute us there, or if you come to my meeting, I will have them on hand. But Duel basically has run out of them, and it is not a simple task for him to go get them printed up, you know, on demand. He can't really go print one or two copies. It's very, very cost ineffective. So anybody who wants to order the past issues, and I hope you do. I really hope you do. It's a great issue. You're going to have to come through binrev.com. Possibly if there's extreme circumstances, we'll try to work something else out. But frankly, he's run out of them, and we can't just keep boxes and boxes of them in everyone's house, especially as the number of issues starts to add up. So I am going to do that. I'm going to have back issues of the old ones available. But yeah, it's just too much burden for everybody in DDP to have boxes of these on hand. So unfortunately, we are going to have to cut off the 1.1 orders from Duel, from the P.O. box, which is, again, I should remind everybody also that is a cash and carry operation. No checks, no money orders. That's not something we are capable of handling right now either. Unfortunately, it's going to have to be cash only. Put it in an envelope, cover it with a piece of paper, you know, so nobody tells that there's cash in there. But that's really the only way that he can do it. So keep that in mind if you're sending orders to them. Or, again, the easiest way, I know a lot of people don't have PayPal accounts or don't trust PayPal or don't want to use them. And technically, you don't need an account. You can pay for it with a credit card through PayPal, via PayPal, without any problems. You don't actually have to create an account, but I know people aren't comfortable with that. So, like I said, for the most part, the current issue will work around, and Duel will still take them through the P.O. box. The directions are on magazine.binrev.com. So, I just wanted to throw that out there. And that has been my week. I went back to work this week. For listeners know, I was on vacation, and I went back to work this week, so I've been working a lot of hours and really haven't had a lot of hacking time, and hopefully this upcoming week or two I will have some better stuff to talk about. Maybe this will make up for it. If Voodoo Hal, if you can talk a few minutes about your OOP classes, your object-oriented programming and C++, which actually we probably shouldn't pigeonhole the C++. You want to keep it more emphasized, keep the emphasis on the object-oriented programming part, do you not?
Right. Mostly, definitely want to keep it on the concepts of programming right now so that it can be applied to C++, to Java, hell, even Python, I believe, is object-oriented.
Right, yeah, I absolutely agree 100%.
But yeah, the lectures are going well. Hopefully, I don't know if I have time, but we may, because no one seemed to log the last one, which I didn't think about doing myself. I may try to, if some people want to redo that one. I don't know if anybody's up for that.
Yeah, that I would definitely be up for it. It's just so hard to find one set time that everybody can make it to. I mean, everybody has real world and jobs and school and all those issues. So it's just so hard to find a good time. What have you decided? You're going to do it every other week. Do you want to explain the timing you've come up with?
Sure. Basically, I posted a poll for everyone, and it looks like Friday is the best. I know it's not perfect for everyone, but it seems to work out for the majority of people who are interested. So we're going to do those Friday every other week. If for instance, it falls on one of the 2600 Fridays, we're going to push it back to probably the next weekend, or the next Friday, and we're going to try to keep them at 9:30 Eastern Time.
9:30 Eastern Time for approximately an hour, or however long it takes, obviously, but approximately an hour?
Yeah, the first time, I think the first one went for 2 hours. The second one may have made it an hour and a half. So at least an hour and a half I'm going to try for.
Good, good. However long it takes to cover the material.
Right.
Yeah, and that is also, you can go to irc.esper.net, and the channel, however, is...
DDP code.
Yep. Pound DDP code. And I went to the first one and listened in. Actually, it was kind of funny. We were actually taping last week's show when you started, so I came in late. But my jaw dropped at how many people were in the channel. I mean, there were a lot of people in there. There's definitely people interested. So I think it was a huge, huge success.
Definitely. This last one wasn't so... There were that many people, but the first one was just amazing.
Yeah, the first one had like a full month or so build-up, so it was everybody knew the date. I think since we didn't quite have the timing issue down, we might have missed a couple people. It might be a good idea to kind of rehash number two,
right.
rehash the second one, cover some of those topics again, and maybe even add to it kind of a two and a half if you want to do something like that. And definitely go to the forums and check out the calendar. Now, you're posting that out there, maintaining it on the calendar, so we can depend on it being out there, whenever the date and time is scheduled. You can put all that stuff out there.
Yep, I'm trying to manage that.
If you don't, one of us will. Between Bland and I, we'll try to make sure it gets out there so everybody can count on. I think the calendar helps so much. Because between doing this show and between RFA and Off the Hook and all the stuff I want to listen to and need to like to listen to, in addition to the once a year or once every few months things like the conferences and DEF CON and InterZone and H2K whatever, whenever that comes along, adding all that stuff on there, I can look ahead of time and plan to be in certain places and plan to be... You know, in the monthly 2600 meetings, it's been tremendously helpful to me personally. I hope it helps other people. I don't know if anybody else uses it as much as I do. I think it's fantastic.
I've started looking at it more, actually, and really am finding it useful, especially now that we're having so many things come up, you know, once every couple of weeks, and actually, two radio shows a week now, RFA and Ben Rev. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, that definitely...
A lot of stuff now.
Yeah, there's even more than that that we listen to, but yeah, there's definitely those two that we put out. Of course, Dual putting out RFA. But, I mean, I assume that in at your job, at work, you have... Well, I shouldn't assume. I'll say in my job, we have Microsoft Outlook. In addition to a plug-in for a web access to calendar information where they list group meetings and scheduled appointments and stuff like that. And that's not exactly something I can list the 2600 meetings on or the Ben Rev radio show and release dates and stuff like that. I can't put it out there because of, obviously, the subject matter. So to me, the calendar is just a place where I can put all the other, the personal, the stuff that I can't talk about and, you know, you... don't tell people about at parties, you know, that kind of stuff. So it works great for me, so I hope other people find it useful. And anybody can post something to it. I know a lot of people are posting their back to school and stuff like that, which is okay, but starts to clutter up the calendar. But if you have any... another thing I think would be good on there, too, is the phone conferences that have been going on lately. I know Decoder has been... bidding on the phone conferences. He lives on the phone conferences. I know he's been doing a lot of the phone conferences lately, and Icon and a bunch of those guys. So if they can use the calendar to put them on there, that would be awesome, and maybe that would help organize, because I know sometimes people will say, oh, I was on for 15 minutes and no one was there, or I didn't get home till this time and I didn't know if you were still there. Maybe if we put it out in the calendar, it'll kind of keep people in sync together.
Definitely.
Not to be confused with Justin Timberlake's In Sync. You had something else you were telling me about earlier that I thought was interesting. You were saying something about some ghetto driving.
Oh, yes. I'm expanding my Ghetto Driving Horizons. This week I went to pick up, looking for a used calculator for school, ended up finding a 5-inch LCD at a pawn shop that had video in.
That's almost like a calculator.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, not exactly. Okay, go ahead.
But basically, I'm designing, I shouldn't say designing, I don't know, I'm implementing a war driving / MP3 player for my car, and that's going to be the key item.
Well, the key item is the screen, the LCD screen?
For me.
Well, that's because you already have the real key component.
Well, true. The laptop itself, the wireless equipment, things like that.
And it's because, basically, did you say that the LCD of the laptop had died on you?
Yeah, it burned out, so it's getting mounted under the seat.
So that is absolutely the epitome of ghetto driving. Mounted under the seat, run the cables up to the LCD. Now, actually sounds like a very interesting project. I wouldn't know. It's definitely going to be some troubleshooting involved in this whole process, because how does the detection work for a 3-inch monitor? You know, how do you set up drivers and resolution? And there's going to be some guesswork in there.
Oh, definitely. Hopefully, it won't be too much of a problem. But I'm assuming, because as video out, I think only supports up to, 640 by 480, maybe 800 by 600 anyway.
Is it 320 by 240?
Oh, really? So it's even...
You know what? I'm really not sure. It's definitely no more than 640 by 480, I'm pretty sure.
That shouldn't be too large.
Yeah. Well,
It's not ghetto enough until there's duct tape involved.
Well, I'm sure you're going to have to duct tape it under the seat to keep it from sliding around.
Exactly.
You have to have some duct tape in there somewhere. Actually, you know, I joke about, you know, ghettifying some things, but even though you're going to use some ghetto equipment, you can still make that look really, really nice. You can put the laptop under the seat, no one will see it or know it's there. I don't know what you're going to do for an occasional reboot, but you'll be running some flavor of Linux, I assume. You might not have to reboot so much.
Well, probably Nopix, since it's all memory resident, and I don't have to worry about anything dying.
You know what? That's a good idea. And then when you shut the car off or when everything gets powered down, it's no big deal. You reboot from the CD again.
Right. Well, and plus, with having a hard drive, I can actually, and being wireless, I can upload my MP3s and things like that to the hard drive and not have to worry about the OS ever dying on me.
Right. Like me and Windows X fucking P. Ah, damn it, I made it halfway through the show before using the F word this time. Damn it. My Windows XP died again this week. Again! Oh, God, it makes me so fucking sick. I am trying my best to migrate everything to Linux. I am trying my absolute damnedest to migrate every single thing that I do to Linux. I won't be able to do it at work. They won't let me. They won't support it. But at home, I am making the... I'm going to keep one box for playing games until I finally... Even that, I'm going to try to get away from using Windows for. I'm going to try to... If I have to use a virtual PC or an emulator or whatever, I'm going to try to even get away from it for that. Or, just... I don't play that many games, to be honest. I can play some of the bigger games on Linux anyway. So maybe I'll just give up on the whole gaming. I'm just so sick of Windows XP dying every week, and it requires a full reinstall. It makes me sick. Absolutely makes me sick. Don't put any flavor of Windows on that. You know better than that, right?
Oh, come on. You mean 3.1 isn't a good idea for what I'm doing?
Well, no. You know, actually, now that I think about it, maybe Nopix won't be the best thing, because if you are going to have some tweaks or some configuration for that monitor, if it auto-detects and runs at a default resolution that's acceptable, that would be great, but I don't know if it will do that. You might have to actually do some modification to the Nopix image and customize it and make a new image, redistribute it to yourself. Is that a term? You know what I'm saying? And same thing also with the depends on what kind of wireless card. I think Bland has had some issues with some wireless cards. They had to work up some hack jobs to get the wireless card to be recognized and work properly in some of the different distros, so...
That's true. I would say very proficient at the Linux kernel, so I'm not too worried about getting my hardware working.
Yeah, the thing is that if it's Nopix, though, when you reboot, I mean, you can't do that every time it reboots. Where would you... Just fit some minor, small files on the diskette, then have it read from the diskette somehow.
Well, also, like I said, I'm going to have the hard drive for MP3 storage, so I could actually store config files and things like that there. Opix is pretty good about that, unbooting, telling it where config things are.
Oh, it is? Okay. See, I was wondering if that's... The problem would be, how would you point the Nopix to look on your hard drive or on the diskette for that information?
Right.
Hmm.
Well, plus, the other thing is, I'll more than definitely have Secure Shell running on it, so when it's on, I'll have a Secure Shell server that I can actually just use the wireless to get to from, like, more than likely from my own bedroom, because I park, like, 5 feet from my window.
Well, that's convenient. What about, let's see... What about Nopix STD also? That might be... I think that has a few extra drivers for some wireless cards that might be helpful, and it comes with... what is it called? Air Snort.
Ah, okay.
And
actually,
that,
I think the original Nopix did, too.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Regular old Nopix. I use that every day, actually.
Yeah, and a lot of other stuff on the STD. I know Bland talked about it and tried it, but I haven't tried the STD distro myself, but that was going to be the next one I spend some time on. So, well, good deal. You know, there's something else that we probably should talk about, since you and I are both on the line, and we both spend our days doing similar things. Since we both... I don't know what your official title is, or if you want to bring that up, but... You know, my official title is Senior Programmer Analyst. I am a computer programmer for a living, not just, you know, as a fun side thing and the whole hacking. That's what I do for a living. And I think you can relate to that pretty well. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, I've been a programmer for a while now, more or less a mainframe tape monkey, but in that.
Well, you know, been there, done that.
Backup technician.
Yeah, you know, actually, it's kind of... I guess this is probably sounds lame to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Everything I say sounds lame to Duel, but, you know, I won't go there. When I started in college, I actually got a weekend job at a software company. I'm trying to pick my words carefully here. Working on an AS400 shop, working in an AS400 shop, three AS400 systems. And I had never ever seen any heavy metal. I'd never seen anything other than PCs, Macs, you know, standard fare, standard issue stuff. When I walked into this company for the first time and walked back into their computer room, I was in heaven. I was just blown away at the equipment that I saw there. I was a tape monkey. That was basically what they hired me to do, was I was a weekend job where I would just have to go back there and run some backups, maintain some systems, operations type stuff, and load and unload tapes all night long. But while I was there, I used that opportunity to teach myself a lot about the systems, and from a system I knew nothing about, kind of work my way up into a programming position there, and then move on to another company on a real mainframe, because the AS400 is a mid-range system, move on to a real mainframe and kind of learn some more. I guess a lot of people think mainframes don't exist anymore and that they're gone and everything's PC and yada, 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 but you and I can attest that that's not the case.
Definitely. Actually, what's funny, and this was, we didn't discuss this earlier because it just happened, actually. I'm in the atrium of the building that I work at currently while we're recording this. And I don't know if you were on the phone line, the con that I was the other night when I said that we have Ethernet outlets in the atrium in our cafeteria for complete public cafeteria.
Right.
Well, some genius just left about 50 pages of our internal mainframe systems manual sitting on one of the tables.
Well, why don't we just open the door to the computer room and give them the passwords next time?
That works too.
And I assume, is your computer room freezing?
Oh, God, yes. we have probably a 5,000 employee campus here, and so our machine room is giant. I mean, it's massive, and it's like 60 degrees at all times.
Yeah, and that, again, that's another thing that I had never experienced before. I was completely new to the environment, And I walked in, and their computer room had the electronic, you had to punch in a, I think it was a 6-digit character to get in, password to get in, and it was freezing. Actually, I like it colder, so it didn't really bother me too much. If you're going to spend more than 10 minutes back there, you probably would need a jacket.
Most people,
if they go back there for 1 or 2 minutes, would want a jacket, but I was kind of comfortable with it, so... only if I had to actually go back there and run something from the main consoles for some kind of emergency or IPLing the machine, something like that. But I'd never been exposed to that kind of environment. I have no idea what kind of similarities we're going to have here. We didn't think about this ahead of time, but for my environment, my computer room, we had 3 AS400 systems, and these systems, for those of you who have never seen them or have only seen them in pictures, let me try to visualize it for you. There were each AS400 consisted of about, well, of course it varies from installation to installation, but we had about 8 racks, 8 actual parts to the AS400, and each part was like a server rack. If any of the listeners have seen what a server rack looks like, if you haven't, think of them, I don't know, as a refrigerator, is that a good comparison?
I think a vending machine.
A vending machine or a refrigerator. Each one single unit is about that size. And think of 7 or 8 of those, they're all side by side. And that makes up one system in my particular circumstance. Now on the other side, behind me, was another system very similar to that. And then the third system, which was like even bigger, had I think 12 units to it. And basically, it formed kind of a maze back in this old computer room. And you would, when you're facing one machine on the far right-hand side, you would basically turn and you'd be facing the second machine. And you'd kind of walk through the maze to the other side and you'd be facing the third machine. You were basically surrounded by these gigantic, again, vending machines, whatever you want to describe them, that put off a lot of heat. And in our particular, when I first started there, this was a company that was growing really quickly. They didn't actually have a professional computer room, for lack of a better term. It was an old basement that was converted, and there was no raised floors or anything nice like that. So all of these systems, with all of the wires, you think wires coming out of a PC are bad. Everybody complains about how many cables and wires, and rightfully so. You ought to look in the back of one of these big boys sometimes. And normally, in most good computer rooms, you have raised floors, and you feed the cables and the wires down underneath where they're hidden. They keep airflow pushing through there. They keep everything cool. They have water detection, stuff like that, so that nothing stays damaged. Well, we didn't have that. Our machines had the wires coming out of the back, and because there were so many of them, they were stacked on top of each other. Our computer room was like the biggest fire hazard you could ever imagine. Even though it was cool, they had these cables piled on top of each other behind the machines that were as half as tall as the vending machine itself. I mean, they basically would come up to your knees, a stack of cables. If any of them died or had a problem, it was god-awful trying to find which cable in that jumble of stuff. And like every once in a while, you got used to it after all, but every once in a while, you just see sparks and shit flying from some corner somewhere. And it was just kind of accepted because that was the way it was. So for anyone who's never seen it, it is definitely a sight to behold, something very much to appreciate. It's not like seeing, you know, you sit in your house and you're happy and you think you got this powerful computer room. I'm sitting here right now recording the show, and I've got 5 PCs staring at me, and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of computing. No, that's nothing. When you get to a company or to a mainframe company or an AS400 shop and see this equipment, it will just stagger your mind. You might not even appreciate it until you start to play with it, but it's definitely something to be appreciated. Do you have a similar environment that you work in now or have worked in?
Well, it's similar here. I remember the first time I was brought here, it was almost awe-inspiring. I mean, we have probably 15 to 20 RS6000s all lined up. We have, I would say, 30 to 40 racks of rack mount servers. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of machines here. It's amazing. I don't know what we do with all of it.
It's too much to keep up with.
Simulator. But we're basically an insurance company, so we have a large number of databases. So we've been around a long time. We have even larger number of databases. But yeah, it's massive. I mean, the tape bank. We have one IBM ATL, which is a giant tape archive. It holds 10,000 tapes.
Now, what kind of tapes?
I believe they're DLT4s. I don't ever touch it, but I'm pretty sure that's what they are.
Okay.
But it's massive. We're using vending machines as a comparison. I think the thing is like 15 vending machines long.
Mm.
Huge. It's got a robotic arm inside of it that moves the tapes on its own. I mean, that alone just makes me kind of go, wow.
Right. Oh, yeah. I've seen those. We don't have one of those, actually. We didn't at that company. The company that I worked at, like I said, they were growing, and that was when I first started with them. Now, later on, like I said, I proved myself, got a programming position, and we moved to a new building, and they built a very nice computer center that was pretty much the nicest in the state. People would come by and give tours. IBM would come by and show people. It was like a demo model of how to make a computer room. So we went from the rock bottom with sparks flying from everything to this new computer room.
Didn't you have a Halon story, I believe?
Oh. Did I already tell you the Halon story?
I think so.
Did I tell you the Halon? Oh, God, man. This is going to be so embarrassing, but this is the funniest story that I've ever, ever... Unfortunately, I'm the butt of the joke, but... Imagine yourself... Again, this was all new to me. I had never even seen or been, and it's very intimidating, awe-inspiring to be in this situation. Well, my job was on third shift, and, you know, that's awfully late. So I wasn't always in the best state of mind sometimes. I would be in there and be, you know, half passed out, dazed, dozing, you know, falling asleep, nodding my head. Well, because of the situation with the computer room, and because of the data and the machines being so incredibly valuable, there is a, I guess, fire control system, a safety system in place in case of emergencies, in case one of those sparks gets out of hand. And it is a Halon-based system, which I don't think they even do those anymore. I think they've gone into something else now, but I'm not sure about that. But this was when you first walk in the computer room, there was a sign on the front door that says "Warning: Deadly Halon." So like here I am, this total newbie, walking in for like training on the job for the first day. The first thing I see is A, that you have to use a combination to get into the room, and B, this big sign that says "Deadly Halon: Warning." Once you get inside, they have these two big tanks. They look like a jetpack or something over on the side, and they have tubes running from them through the ceiling to different parts of the room. And the tanks, of course, have the big do not touch symbol, danger, warning, blah, 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 and there's deadly Halon signs on each one of the walls. Very, very intimidating, especially since I didn't know the first friggin' thing about Halon or what it... So they tell, you know, I asked about it. I'm no dummy. I asked about it and checked what's up with that. And they said, you know, if there's a fire, if something happens, the tanks will kick in. The sensors will go off. The tanks will kick in, and you have, I think it was 20 seconds. It was 10 or 20 seconds before the Halon would come into the room. Well, this room was, you know, a big bedroom, I guess, if you want to think of it like say two bedrooms put together about the size, you could easily get out of it in a second or two. But when you're in a certain situation, you don't really think clearly, especially when you're half asleep. So the story goes like this. I'm in there one night. I'm working. I'm half asleep. I got the lights out. I'm kind of dozing. And with the tapes that we used to use at the time were 3490 cartridges. And you'd load about six or seven of them at a time. And basically that would run for an hour before you'd have to reload six or seven more tapes. So I was in the middle of one of these tape changes. I go back there to one of the three machines. I'd unload the tapes. There were two tape drives next to each other, one for each machine. So I go in, I have six tapes in my left hand, balancing them against my chest. I have six tapes in my right hand, balancing them against my chest. All of a sudden, I hear sirens go off in the room. I am here to tell you that self-preservation is alive and well inside of Stank Dog. These sirens went off, and they were ear-piercing. I didn't know what they were. I didn't care what they were. All I know is that before those 12 tapes hit the ground, I was out the back door, full dead-on run, and the only thing in my feeble mind was, Deadly Halon! Deadly Halon! I ran out the back door like O.J. fucking Simpson. I hit that door like Eric Dickerson with a shoulder. I spun off the door, flew right out. I never hesitated, didn't miss a step. Fuck the tapes. Fuck the AS-400s. Fuck the building. I ain't going out like that. I am not going to die like a punk. I hit that door and that place could burn to the ground for all I care. I ran out the back door to the computer room, the emergency door. I run out. We had two buildings next to each other. I run full blast to the next building, punch in the combination, because again, this is the middle of the night. Everything's locked up. I run to the building next door. I call the manager. I call my manager, who again, I'd only been to this, you know, maybe this was within a month this happened, so I was still a complete newbie. I go in. I had run between buildings, fully out of breath, scared shitless, half asleep. I get on the phone. I call my manager at home. It's about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm out of breath on the phone with this guy, and I'm going, computer room, there's a fire. Everything blowing. Deadly Halon! Deadly Halon! Completely in panic mode. It was, I would give any amount of money in the world to have jumped out of my body and watched myself in full panic mode. I think it's the only time in my life that I've ever been completely, oh my God, I'm going to die. I was so scared and so blown away by that incident that, it traumatized me, dude. I'm still to this day traumatized. That is the Deadly Halon incident. That's the Deadly Halon story I mentioned to you that time.
I think you saw, I remember my post about my traumatizing incident when all the lights and the power and the entire floor went off. I'm just sitting in this dark room with its hum and all these little LEDs staring at me. It was the most bizarre feeling.
Yeah, it's like open the pod bay doors, Hal. It's like the computer took over.
Exactly.
Yeah, the same thing. What it turned out to be was it was just the general fire alarm for the building. It wasn't anything to do with the Halon sensors. Of course, I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking about getting my ass out. So I call him up. I'm completely in panic mode. He basically says, oh, that's just the fire alarm for the building. Don't worry about it. It goes off all the time. What do you mean it goes off all the time? Why didn't you tell me? I'm fucking about to piss myself running from this shit. And you're going to tell me, oh, just go in and punch in this code and it goes off. So I go in, I punch the code, sure enough, it goes off. I go back down to the computer room. I'm still, even though I turned it off, even though I'm still scared shitless, I punch the code in the door, I open the door and jump back like Halon's going to come rolling out. I don't know what Halon looks like. I don't know what Halon smells like. I didn't know what the hell to expect. So I pull the door open and jump back. Everything seemed okay. I peer my head in. Everything was fine. There's 12 tapes laying scattered on the floor, which I had not labeled yet. So they're all out of order. So I screwed up the whole backup and had to start over, which sucked. But the moral of the story is, I actually was proud to know that self-preservation works.
And then you can run a sub-4-second 40. Huh?
Oh, God. I swear, I don't know how in the world I got out of there so fast. I hit that door with my shoulder and spun. I was like, forget it, dude. I ain't going out like that. I am not going out no weekend, midnight, third shift. You know, I'm not going to be a in the paper Deadly Halon victim. That's not for me. Oh God, I'm actually in tears right now from telling that. That was the funniest thing. I wish somebody would have had a video camera taping me. I wish somehow I could see myself, because I know how I felt. I know I must have looked like, I have no idea what I must have. It is 4:30 in the morning. I'm running out the back door of this building at full run, in full panic mode, with alarms going on around me. It has to be the most comedic scene. It would make a great scene in a movie, I'm sure.
You know what that's called? Movie initiation.
Well, you know, and you know what? I went back in there. I went back down and did my job, spent the rest of the shift, and yes, I got a lot of cracks from the guys about it. I'm like, hey, man, y'all got to tell me this kind of stuff. So that's the thing. Now, like I said, I don't think they use Halon much anymore in these places. When we went to the new building, we got a nice computer room, like I said earlier, with raised floors, water sensing, temperature monitoring, this huge equipment that made me, there was no sparks flying out. It was a combination of all those bad things that made me panic, you know? So when we got in the new computer room, I was much more comfortable. We had a tape library with racks that you could go up and down. It was just a beautiful, very, very nice place. But yeah, that whole Halon incident is just probably the low point of my life.
You get a kick out of this. Not only do we still have an active Halon system, but we have, you mentioned 3490s. Those are our high-tech mainframe backup units. We even have 3420s. The big, like, movie projector type backup systems. Yeah.
Well, actually, out of our three machines, two of them were on 3490Es, and one of them was still on the old 6250 reel-to-reel tapes.
Yeah, that's what our 3420s are.
Yeah, so we had these big, I call them magician trunks, like the magicians put all their props in these big heavy-duty trunks, and it would fill up three of those. I think there was 30 or 40 to a trunk of the 6250 tapes, and we used three trunks full to back up the one machine. And then the 3490s, we would use about 25 or 30 on each of the other two machines. Now, later on, we got rid of the 6250 finally and replaced it with an 8mm drive, and we were backing it up to two 8mm. What used to be three giant trunks of tapes were brought down to two 8mm tapes. So, huge,
all
huge
technology.
Jump. Now, it was still slow. It still took it took even longer on the 8mm, frankly. But that's something else that a lot of people might not appreciate or know. If you've never loaded a reel-to-reel tape before and seen a reel-to-reel tape drive, you get some appreciation for where we've come from, where the computer industry started and came from, and where we are now. I mean, it's not all about diskettes. There's a lot of other stuff out there that people have never even seen and thought of or heard of, and it's still there, and it's still in use today, like you just said. Now you got me wanting to come visit now. I want to come see your setup, man. I'll come in with a doctor's mask to protect me from the Halon.
I was going to try to take pictures one night, actually.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Maybe that's why I have trouble sleeping today. Maybe I'm traumatized. I have some kind of deep psychological problem because of the Halon incident.
I could do it.
Oh, man, that was good. But back on the topic of our jobs and what we do, I mean, there's an occasional story like that, but for the most part, I spent 8-hour shifts, 7 hours and 45 minutes were sitting in front of a terminal, and the other 15 were loading tapes, you know, back then. Now that I'm an actual programmer for a living, I'm in front of the screen 8 hours a day. And I think you told me earlier you're pretty much like that too, correct?
Right, where I'm at, I'm actually 12-hour shift, so it's even worse.
Oh, man. So anybody listening, I know a lot of people ask me sometimes about, you know, how do you get into programming, and what should I study, and what books, and you know what? More importantly, let's address the topic of what it means to be a programmer, a professional programmer for a living. You are going to be spending 8 or 12-hour shifts sitting in front of a terminal. It's a very, very big difference than sitting down and writing a Perl program in a half an hour. You know, programming you might think is fun, and I still think it's fun. But my point is, it's very much an acquired thing. It's only for certain people. If you like to program, that's one thing. But think about whether or not you want to commit to spending 8 hours nonstop programming. I do. I love it. I absolutely love programming. I can do it for 24 hours a day and have before, you know? But some people, if you think you're going to program for a couple hours a day and then spend the rest of the day getting coffee and surfing the web, you're going to be programming nonstop. So make sure you understand that going in, that it, you know, most people say, oh my God, you have the most boring job in the world. Well, yeah, to most people, it is the most boring job in the world. And I guess in some ways it is. But I love it. And unless you have that mindset of wanting and knowing and just feeling the accomplishments of getting programs completed and debugging and pushing through obstacles and figuring things out, unless you're comfortable doing that all day, it might, you know, just keep that in mind before you go deciding whether you want to, you know, become a professional programmer. You might be, you know, admin job might be more up your alley, or operations, things like that. Do you see, sometimes you're also, I've known programmers who had to sit and monitor systems. They didn't actually even get to do programming. Their job was to sit there in case something screwed up, in case a program halted, in case something went down and they had to fix it. And the only programming they would do was reactive programming to fix something that had happened earlier.
That seems to be a lot of what we do. We have, I think you wrote an article actually on JCL, and that's one of our functions here.
Oh yeah, and most people have never even seen JCL, unless they worked on some kind of heavy metal systems, unless they worked on a mainframe, they're not going to know even what JCL is. I don't even know how to describe it to someone. How would you define or describe JCL to someone who has
a nightmare?
Yoel.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a different animal. It is JCL, of course, stands for Job Control Language, and it is the interface between your program and the system. It is a way that you can write a program that says, read this file, process this data, and make this file. Well, your program can say, okay, file in and file out. That's what you name them. But the system doesn't know where the hell file in and file out is. So that's what JCL steps in, and it points and connects things to the system, as well as some security, some authority issues, job control of the job flow and scheduling, and disaster recovery, error recovery from the steps of the job, you can actually do some logic and programming within the JCL. If the first start part of this program doesn't work, run this. Stuff like that. So basically it's an interface between the program and the system itself. Is that a good... Did I cover it pretty
well? I still think nightmare is a good term for it.
Well, yeah. In other words, the short version is nightmare. Yeah, it absolutely is.
I think you hit on one really good thing, and it's about being, especially professional.
Hey, that's one more than usual. Go ahead.
Even though I'm not doing it now, that's what I've been doing for the last 3 years or so. And the two biggest things about being a programmer, one is not necessarily peer respect, but coworker respect. You are everyone's bitch for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the easiest way to describe it.
Yeah, frankly, yes.
I mean, the VPs bitch about something, which gets bitched to someone else below them, and it all comes back to you. This doesn't work.
Yeah, shit rolls downhill.
Another one of your great sayings.
There you go.
But the other definite thing is, I mean, it's almost like, unless you have a true, just absolutely love for programming, it almost kills your desire for computing at all. I mean, I've got tons of coworkers before who, you know, would code all day long, and they would go home and they would loathe the idea of even touching a computer.
Right.
So, I mean, those are just two major things. And also, if you're a programmer, and anyone who doesn't know anything about computers knows you're a programmer, the first thing they ask you is, hey, can you fix my computer?
Yes, and Wintermute has a shirt that he loves that says, no, I will not fix your computer. And, you know, I tell Duel a lot of these stories, complaining about you know, that situation at my job too, lack of respect. And it's from my peers as well. From the VPs and from people who aren't IT people, that I can take pretty well because it comes with the territory. They don't understand the like our listeners right now, they may not have experienced the mainframe environment and some of the things we're talking about, but at least I think they understand it and they can respect and appreciate what goes into it and what all it entails. Most of the people, most non-technical people that you're going to work with, like you said, VPs and stuff like that, are going to come down on you, and they don't understand what all you do and how much knowledge you have and how you can handle things, and there's not much appreciation or respect. Duel gets a lot of my grief where I complain about, oh, they don't appreciate this and they don't respect that, but it's definitely a reality, again, to keep in mind, even though as a programmer, sometimes you will get little or no respect.
And also one of the biggest fears, the first time it happened, and if you become a programmer, you'll know this one day, aside from the deadly halon, are these wonderful things called code reviews. I remember my first one. It was the most terrifying thing I've ever had to go through. I mean, you just couldn't imagine how bad it was.
Actually, I have no idea what you mean by a code review. I'll be honest. We don't have that much organization.
Well, basically, a code review is the programmers and the development team sitting down with the VPs, the heads of the company, to find out, you know, exactly where you are on the project and things like that. And unfortunately, from the last project I was on, I was a lead developer, so most all the questions came to me.
Right.
Which is just terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a term like that, but of course you have to go through that process as part of a project implementation. For the most part, we just have meetings every so often. I know the information that I need, so I take charge and lead and say, okay, we need to do this, we need to do that. I'm putting you on this, I need you to work on that, you need to get this information to me. And that's really, it can be, if someone knows what they're doing and can take charge of it, it's not so bad. But when you got VPs, like you said, in there, and people, directors of a department who are completely unqualified for their positions or don't know what they're talking about come in, it's a frustrating feeling when, and this is something I have to deal with on a daily basis, it's a very frustrating feeling when you know the way something should be done, the right way to do it. You know that this is the most efficient, cheapest, most reasonable, most secure, most efficient, cleanest, easiest way to do something, but your project manager or somebody says, no, 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 I'm going to do it this way. It's the most frustrating feeling in the world, and that happens to me regularly. I don't know about you. Happens to me regularly, and that's something else to keep in mind as a programmer. You, like you said earlier, I mean, that's, you are everybody's bitch. You know, if you are a manager or director where you have some decision-making control in it, that's great. But if you're just a programmer, then you are going to have to do what you're told, and sometimes you don't agree with it. And you have to make the decision of whether you want to go through with it, whether you want to do it the right way, how you're going to handle and react to that situation. It is a very a stressful job. I mean, that's definitely a true statement, I would say. Do you agree with that?
Oh, definitely.
It's a very, very stressful job. It's not sitting back like they show you in the movies. It's not kicking back with your feet up and the laptop in your lap and, you know, eating a can of Pringles. And it's not all fun and games. It's a very, very stressful job, and you have deadlines, and you have people breathing down your back, and you're trying to do something and write code the wrong way because someone told you to do it that way, even though you know it's not the best way or it's a downright wrong way to do something. It's definitely a stressful job, and you know it all comes back to non-IT related, just in general. I sometimes hate saying this because it comes across as very arrogant in a weird sort of way, but it's all about dealing with the normals. people don't understand, not only hackers, but just people who are different, people who are smarter, people who have different experience and knowledge. It's hard for us to deal with people who don't have that same knowledge. That's why we have such a close-knit community, a close-bonded community, hacking community, is because we can have mutual respect for each other and appreciation for each other. And it's something that the normals can't do. I don't care if somebody has a vice president position or a director of a department just because they have a master's degree or a doctor's degree. I've met some pretty fucking stupid doctors in my life. All that means is they could afford to go to college longer than me. That's all that means to me. So it's frustrating when you're in a situation like that, but that's something else to be prepared for. You know, we had a lot of news topics to cover, and there's no way we're going to get to them. You know that, right?
Yeah, we took about that much.
We ranted. We went on. I think this actually might have been very enlightening for people who didn't already know. A lot of people are like us, and that we live in it every day. So maybe we'll get some emails going. You know, preach on, brother. Fight the fight. They can understand and relate to it. But for some of you guys out there in high school and college that haven't experienced this yet, keep it in mind. I don't want to chase you away from being a programmer. I don't want to scare you. I don't want to put anybody away. I just want to educate you on what it entails. Just be prepared and know what you're in for, and don't be afraid. You know, sometimes you're going to be in a position where, like I said, you're forced to do something that someone tells you to do and you might not agree with it. You can't be afraid to move and leave and go somewhere else and you know, do what's right for you. And I find myself in that situation right now. Comes a point where you need to move on. You need to, you know, look out for number one to move on with your life and do what's best for you. So if you're a person who's lived in the same place their whole life, and your grandparents and your great-grandparents, programmers might be doing some traveling from place to place too. It's not really otherwise it can be a dead end job if you're not willing to move around and move up in the world. Well, I hope that wasn't too depressing there, was it?
Well, I mean, in a lighter note, I mean, there's some fun things. It's not all bad. And actually, you're sitting down with a laptop and a can of Pringles actually reminded me one time there was 2 weeks that my boss said I could go write code on the roof. So that's what I did.
Wow.
I computer nerd with a tan.
Wow. So now see, we have wireless all over campus that I could use. I could do my job from home. I could do my job from sitting out in the park in the middle of the... I could do it from the middle of the cafeteria. I can do my job from anywhere. But they won't hear of it. Oh, no. You must be in there chained to the desk. Anyway. You know, we're going to have to wrap this up. We're going to have to bump a couple of these things to next week. Let me see if there's anything I really want to touch on, though. Most of this can be bumped back. Most of this can be moved back. Actually, I will mention that Microsoft's new operating system, Longhorn, has been bumped back again. It was originally supposed to come out for 2004, bumped to 2005. It's been bumped again. Looks like it's going to be 2006 before it comes out. So that was announced. I'll make sure, in case anybody didn't hear that. It's a good thing because, you know, that gives us another year or two to push Linux. It's gaining a foothold. It's reaching out. It's becoming more and more standard, more and more accepted. So the more they push back Longhorn, the more Microsoft pushes back anything, the better it is for us. So, and actually, there's a little conspiracy theory that goes along with that we'll talk about next week as well. I guess that's going to have to be it. I have closing music tonight is going to be from Auditory again. It's called Blowing Up Your Speakers. Shout-outs. Do you have any shout-outs you want to give?
Just the guys on the DDP boards, people showing up for the IRC lectures, thanks. Bazaar. Just definitely Fiend for helping to log this the first time. That's pretty much it. If I forget anybody, sorry.
Yeah, he put a lot of, you know, he and Gluco, a lot of those guys put in some time setting those channels up and getting some stuff organized, so definitely shouts out to them. And again, to Decoder, hopefully we can do these conferences, get them going more often, more regularly. And, I guess we're going to have to end it. As usual, you can email us at letters@benrev.com. If you can relate to these experiences, if you want to add to what we described, if we missed something, if you want to make fun of me for the Halon incident or convey your newbie initiation story, by all means, letters@benrev.com. And I think that's going to do it. So, Voodoo Hal, thank you very much for being on here. And I think, I hope, you know how we end the show every week. We will see you guys next week. Same hack time.
AMAC channel.